celebrating the world's best dabs.
Son, this is whiskey. Try some.
Okay, thanks, Dad.
What are you doing?
Nothing, honey.
Sure, Dad may forget birthdays, graduations, even your fourth grade piano recital. But he'll never forget to tell you.
You're doing that wrong. No, I'm not, Dad. Yes, you are.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Dadcast. I am your host, JP, joined as always, well, most always, the man with no hair, a very, very, very interesting fellow. His name is Nick Martin. Nick, welcome to the show as always. How are you, man?
Thanks, JP. I'm good, man. How are you doing?
We are living the dream. Today's a big, super duper, extra special day because we don't have one guest. We don't have two guests. We don't have three guests. We have four guests on the podcast, and they range from, well, they're all very, very, very popular. First, let me welcome to the show who I think the main guest today is, the man, the myth. His name is Stormy Warren. He is the morning show host on SiriusXM's The Highway. Stormy, how are you, man?
Man, I am so glad to be here. I've been looking forward to this. You guys reached out, and it's right up my alley. I'm a proud dad of two teenage boys, or actually a 20-year-old boy now, and I'm all about the dad and the dad cast and everything we're going to touch on, and music as well. So it's all my favorite subjects.
Well, you appreciate that, and I'm going to love talking to you about radio. Also joining us, you may have heard of him. He's a very little country star. He's Brett Young. Brett Young, how are you, sir?
What's going on, man? I'm good. Stormy, maybe you didn't, COVID wasn't the same for you, but you left out the dad bod that I've been working on for the last year.
Well, I started pre-pandemic, so I had a head start.
I got you all beat. I've been doing this dad bod thing since 2010.
Okay? Yeah. Before Leo made it cool.
That's why we cut it off right about here. And of course, you know what? I want to introduce you guys. I do. But you know what? I'm going to let Nick handle this one because, you know, we got to give Nick some love. Nick.
Hey, what's up? These are my buddies, Brian and Ben, Elvis Monroe. And we have something awesome today. We've got a brand new song that they co-wrote with Brett. So hang on and we'll get to that. But let's talk about dad stuff for a little bit.
Dad stuff. Okay, let's do the rounds. Of course, all of you are fathers. Let's go back to you guys, Ben and Brian. Both fathers, how old are your kids? Oh, yeah. How many do you have? And tell us a little bit about them.
You go first.
I have two kids, and they're amazing. Josh and Marissa, they actually live right there in Oregon where you guys are. And it's amazing. My son actually graduated from U of O. He's a doc. My daughter's in college right now. And I couldn't be more proud. They make me proud every day. I'm actually going. I just bought tickets to go see them next week. So I'm excited. I just miss them all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here and I left them 20 minutes ago and I miss them already. I can't even imagine how it's going to be when I get to the position you are in. Stormy.
Yeah.
No, Ben. Go back to Ben.
Yeah. What are you doing, man?
So I got my son when he was 5 years old. So I'm a proud stepdad. You know, he's been mine for almost 8 years. So I'm proud to say, yes, he's my son. And it's been amazing. Something I definitely, you say you plan parenthood. This wasn't planned. But it's been an unbelievable ride. And no disrespect to anyone else's kids, we got the best son in the world. So he's awesome.
You built him a skate park in his backyard.
I did.
No joke.
Built him a ramp. It was awesome.
Huge. Awesome.
He's worth it. Although I went to say, hey, bud, I got to go to work this morning. And he's like, just let me sleep, dude. So I got gaming to do. Let me sleep.
We've got the same scenario. And with all COVID and school's only part time. They're up to like 3 a.m. Or at least I tell them to go to bed. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, I go in there and Fortnite's still happening. Good God.
Oh, yeah.
Stormy.
Hey, I have two boys. My oldest is 20 and is a sophomore at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. And then I have a 16-year-old who's living under our roof through this whole scenario. Two totally different personalities, both amazing. And because of that diversity in their personalities, it really stretches us as parents, but it also just educates us and we learn so much from them on a daily basis. They're just really good dudes. And they've approached the quarantine and the pandemic in two different ways. One is like, I'm immune. I'm out there. I'm not going to get it. That's the college kid. Can't tell him what to do. So, well, good luck, kid. And then the youngest is like, I could live under this roof for the rest of my life, you know, and it'd be perfectly happy. So
that's the smart one.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And And you're so right about the gaming. It's like I'll fall asleep on the couch and wake up at like 3 and there's still noises happening up in the bedroom. I'm like, what the heck is going on at 3 a.m.? But everybody's on the same clock, I think, through this whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Brett. Now, I already know the answers to these, but father to one and maybe one's coming. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we have a little toddler running around now. She's almost 18 months. And then we just announced the baby girl number 2 is coming in July. So I've been getting all the warnings that are the ones I think Stormy was just alluding to, which is anything that you think you learned with the first one that you'll be able to apply to the second one. Don't lie to yourself. Forget everything you learned. Everything about this one's going to be different. You're going to have to start over. And so we're on cloud 9, but also pray for us.
Absolutely. Hey, man, in my position, you know, if you guys don't realize, Nick has, what is it, 137 kids now?
That I know about, yeah.
So, hey, Brett, number 2, you're doing okay.
Presley looks like the Gerber baby, man. I was showing her off to our friends the other day. She's just a beautiful little baby.
It's surprising because her parents are not good looking.
No, they're not.
She's so fun. Thank you, man. She basically is exactly her mom, except she has my coloring, which leads everybody to think she looks just like me. But I think coloring is a more dominant trait that people see. But when she sits with my wife and I see their profile, she looks just like Taylor, which is a very good thing for her.
It is. I will agree. I'm pretty glad she doesn't look like you, brother.
I feel like I'm the same category. You know, my lady is beautiful. Thank God for her looks.
No kidding.
Thanks, Stormy. Appreciate that. You know the deal. A face for radio, right? Except you've done a whole bunch of TV.
They call it a cliche for a reason. It's close to the truth.
Now, Brett, do you know the gender, or if that's even the proper thing to say these days?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's proper to say or what's allowed to be said.
A boy or a girl?
It's another little girl. So, needless to say, I'm starting a shotgun collection.
Yeah, right.
Good call.
You should. You absolutely should.
And a savings account.
My gosh! We're like building new closets, I guess, because there's definitely not going to be enough room.
You should probably build another house too, because when they're teenagers, it's awful. It's
like, people are like, "Oh, you guys have a guest house?" I'm like, "No, it's a closet."
That's not a bad problem to have, Brett.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. So, wow, this adventure in fatherhood. Now, happy birthday, Brett. By the way, a week ago today, you turned the big 4-0.
I did. Thank you. Yeah, I don't feel a day over 39, but it's the reality is setting in. We had a good little trip. My wife surprised me with a trip down to Miami. It was the first time that she's been without the baby. We left him with my parents, and it was a blast. And I had a designated driver the whole time because she's pregnant. So it's beautiful.
Nice. Now, when were you in Miami? Was that recently, like super recent?
Yeah, we went down for the birthday. So last week. Do you not see this glowing tan?
Oh, you're right. I would like to say the same thing, but I'm sitting in front of a window. So, I mean, Irish, pale, redhead, white, doesn't get much whiter than this guy. But I was in South Florida last week as well. I took my lady down for a little getaway, and we spent a few days in Hollywood Beach. And it's amazing.
Were you attacked by any crazy spring breakers? Because apparently we were like one block away from all that madness.
Everywhere we went, it was madness. Mm. And no one wore masks, which didn't really bother me, but it freaked out my lady a little bit.
Yeah, they're a little bit looser in Florida, just a tiny bit.
We did a podcast with Bossum Youssef, and he said how they don't wear them here. They use the mask as thongs down in South. You can check that episode on April 6th. Wink, wink.
Interesting.
Hey, Brett, congratulations on number 1 today, bud.
Yeah, man. Dude, congrats. Thank you
very much. I played that song for Stormy when it was just a demo at the Palm in Nashville, and I'm not putting you on the spot, but I am going to call you out. You cried a little bit.
Oh, like a freaking baby. I mean, it was just when you got to the heartbeats at the end, I was already crying all the way through it. And then you get the heartbeat at the end. And it's just like, what a beautiful tribute to the 2 most important and now soon to be 3 most important women in your life. It's hard to write a love song to one woman. You wrote it to two, and it's as a songwriter, it's just a testament to your craft.
Thank you.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna clap on that.
Yeah, man.
Well, that one had early success on your show before we had even gone to terrestrial radio with it, and it was like took the longest of any of my songs. I think it was 48 weeks at terrestrial radio. So that means Stormy heard it a year and a half ago. We did.
It's funny. We're so far ahead of the game that when a song like Lady Goes Number One on terrestrial radio, we're like, what? Hmm?
Yeah. we're on the third song.
Yeah, you know,
that's actually smart though. It's kind of it's been the Lifehouse business model. Like we were slow climbers, man. Like the song You and Me, I think, was in the charts for 76 weeks or wow. something crazy. Phew. But it just means you stick around, man. It's got staying power and people love hearing it. So
it's also a beautiful thing for the songwriter because the longer it's on the chart, the longer it's paying.
Yeah.
When a song goes number one in a couple of weeks, that's a really fantastic feat and shows the popularity of the song, but it doesn't really make a lot of money.
If you're a songwriter that's getting those 15 week cuts, you're like, yeah, I hope I got one following that up because that was too quick.
Right.
Doesn't he look like Captain America? Damn, dude.
I was hoping he'd wear the back.
Is that a bear hat? Is that a Crater Lake High hat we got.
It's a Cincinnati Reds hat, actually.
Oh, are you? I thought you were a Dodger fan.
Big Dodger fan, but that's why I picked a black and white one because I have a company. I'm actually this company. I have a company, a clothing company called Caliville. So I swipe up anything with a C on it in black that I can find.
All right. Well, with that being said, since I know you don't have much time, I'm going to get what I said I was going to get, and I brought here for you. I literally brought this in today to wear for you.
So let me see what you got.
Right back.
Is it weird that I'm a little nervous?
I'm a little nervous. I got to work with this guy.
He just talked about masks as a thong, and then he left the room to change.
Exactly. This podcast is going to be over before we even start.
And he's been gone a while, so I.
It's been.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, there we go.
This is the year to be a bandwagon fan if you're going to do it, because I don't think they're beatable this year.
Bandwagon, let me tell you something. I grew up in Southern California. Kirk Gibson around those bases. I was about 10 years old. And
there you go.
I'm a Dodger fan.
All right. I didn't mean you, by the way. I meant in general. We're gonna get a much bigger fan base this year that will go away as soon as we're bad again.
Yeah, but and not me. I'm in for the long haul. But we finally got that. We finally got that world championship, and there's no asterisk. I don't care who you are.
Nope.
This is my Dodger tie. I worked at CNN in Los Angeles, right there at Sunset and Cahuenga, and Ted Turner would supplement our income because of his relationship with the MLB, owning the Braves. That wherever he had bureaus at an MLB team, he would coordinate fake money, like Monopoly money, that could only be spent at the ballpark. So Dodger dollars is what they were called. And so we got supplemented our income with Dodger dollars. So I would actually go to Dodger games to eat.
That's amazing.
It's a true story. Like a Dodge dog, man. That's what
I know.
I don't care who you are. So
You know, Brett, I don't know if I ever told you, man, my very first Lifehouse gig was Dodger Stadium.
You did tell me that, and I'm really still, like, ultimately jealous of that and don't really like talking about it with you.
I just wanted to remind you, you know.
Yeah, I'm aware of all your incredible success in multiple ventures.
Right.
Some of us over here just in the first band or project they ever did, by the way, just FYI. Yeah.
Well, on your seventh number one, whatever. Dude.
Is it seven or eight? Is it seven?
And I think
it's like, hey, only seven. We were
waiting. I think it's nine at the highway, though.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Well, Corey, probably 10 or 11, actually, but you know,
we were waiting. Brett, Sleep Without You went number one the day that we threw down the gauntlet and had a 2-on-2 basketball challenge with you that day. And you got called at CMA Fest.
That's right.
Yeah, we were with you. Your song went number one. And then you went and sang it in the stadium.
Uh-oh.
And you threw down the gauntlet. It was a basketball challenge. 2-on-2.
That's right. Oh, buddy.
I bet you would pick Tim Tebow, though. He'd probably pick 10 to
play. That was the first one, I think, wasn't it?
No, second one.
That was second. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah, I would pick Tebow, except I just witnessed him grab a 17-year-old kid off of the 17th tee box at Sawgrass and carry him and dive into the pond with him. So, like, maybe you want to be, like, around Tim but not on his team, because if that's going to go down. And there's no – if you've ever seen him, there's, like, there's no way to stop him from picking you up and taking you in the water. If he wants to do that, you're going. So
I'm bringing
maybe rules. We play on the same court, but like a whole game after him or
something. That's funny.
I'm just sitting back in awe here. I'm
He honestly, no joke, he got up and he hit his ball, and then there were a bunch of the Wish kids there for this event,
right?
And one of the Wish kids is a 17-year-old kid and apparently a pretty good golfer. And if you know, the island green on 17 is the one that's over water with water right behind it, so it's almost impossible to land it on, and even just as hard if you land it on to keep it on the green. And this kid hit it onto the green.
Wow.
Right out of the stands. And so Tim, in celebration, picked him up and ran and dove into the water with him. And then his Tim's assistant that came to like help the kid out while he was trying to help the kid, Tim grabbed his assistant and yanked him in too. So it was not a safe hole to be on for about 10, 15 minutes.
Oh, wow. That is awesome.
All right. So what do you think, you guys? Are you ready to debut a song by Elvis Monroe? Yeah. Is that something you'd like to do now? You want to hold off a bit?
No, sure, but I'd love to talk about it. I'd love to talk about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've got to hear the story. The story is amazing.
Yeah. So if for all of you listening to this podcast right now and checking it out on the video, brand new song, you know what? I'm not going to tell the story. I am sorry. Brian, Elvis Monroe, the conch is yours. Let's talk about this brand new song.
Well, I just remember it was kind of funny because we were out with Daughtry and we're on the bus, and Brett calls and invites us to go out to see him play with Lady A, and you forgot.
We were getting ready to go on stage, and Brett texts me, goes, "Hey, Bob, we're doing this." And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great.
We had a day off.
Totally, doing
nothing.
Totally forgot that we were going to go see Lady A with our boy Brett. And then I remembered halfway through their gig, I'm like, oh!
Yeah. So we meet up at this little place called the Beaver Creek Saloon in Beaver Creek, Oregon. And apparently, Brett, it's a place that you cut your teeth doing some karaoke back in the day with your sister. Is that correct?
Yeah, I went when me and my now wife were first dating. She finished school in Arizona and went back to live with her parents for a bit in Seattle. So I went and actually lived with my sister in Oregon for a while just to be closer to Taylor, so that the long distance was a little easier to manage. And so if you know Beaver Creek, it's like a 17-minute one-lane back road, and right in the middle of that 17-minute drive, there's just this tavern and little cafe right there that does karaoke. So karaoke is still something that makes me uncomfortable, but when it's the only thing you have, unless you want to drive all the way into Portland, it's just, you know, you have enough to drink and you get over your fear and you sing in front of a bunch of, you know, strangers every Monday night. It's no big deal.
There it goes. So on this particular night, we pull up on the bus. The bus pulls up in front of this place. We go in, and Brett's like, "Well, I think it's karaoke time." And I'm like, "Dude, I don't karaoke. Like, I suck at karaoke."
Tonight you do.
Yeah. And so he's like, "What if we go up there and we do a bunch of songs we really don't know? Then we're all in the same boat and we're having some fun." So we bust out about 10 or 11 songs. I mean, we're talking like, Ice Baby. We do some Garth, so we can kind of get through that. Like, you know, all three of us got that together. I think, Brett, you pulled out some Tupac, and we were just having a blast. And then at the end of it, some guy yells out, "Hey, let somebody else sing." And when that happened, Brett and I walked away, and Ben puts his mic in the back pocket, and I watch Brett's brother-in-law walk up to his sister and say, "Hey, do a shot with me. You're like family. You're his someday, right?" And literally Taylor turns to Brett and says, "Hey, Brett, am I your someday?" And he goes, "Hold on, Brian." He's like, "Oh, of course I'm your someday. Yeah, babe." And I grab my phone and start putting that conversation in my phone. And Captain America himself, he's taller than I, looks over my shoulder and goes, "What you doing?" And I'm like, "Ah, damn, he caught me." He goes, "No, no, no, one day, someday." And that was it. That was the title. And then we just started bouncing off ideas back and forth right there on that spot. And you started writing the music about 2 days later on the bus. And I do remember writing the song on the bus, bouncing it back and forth with Brett and Ben. And then I demoed it and I brought it to Route 91 when you guys, when you were playing guitar for Brett that week.
Yeah.
And I brought it to both of them, demoed it just to show it to them. And then we all know what happened then. But I actually met my one day someday the next day.
The next day.
It was so crazy. Wow.
I think Brett would be good at sharing like the process that we were able to write without being in the same room, because we were all on tour, we were all on separate schedules. You know, we were working on our thing. I was bouncing out to play guitar with Brett when he needed me. So it was such an amazing organic process that I'd like to hear your take on it, brother.
Yeah, I mean that was exactly the start of it. It was me and Taylor hadn't gotten married yet, and so it was, she was my one day someday. You know, that it was eventually going to happen. That person that you wait for forever. I already met her. I just hadn't married her yet, and so I watched him writing down the idea and gave him a little different idea for the title. But this was like pre-pandemic. So we hadn't, as an industry, fallen in love with Zoom writing or really even started doing them yet. So it wasn't like we sat face to face and wrote the song in a sitting, you know? And so I think Brian was so inspired by it. By the time I heard, you know, I think I did a lyric tweak on like one pass at lyrics. And then the next time heard it, you had totally dove into it. And I think the cool thing about it was there probably would have been more maybe fine tuning or like looking into lyrics if it wasn't so clearly something that had become your story. Like I could tell how meaningful, like everybody knows one day, someday, but by the time I heard it from you, I went, that's so perfectly organically what was on Brian's heart. Like, and I think that's, as a songwriter, what I've always tried to do is make it so personal that when people hear it, they feel connected immediately to your story, and it takes them from your story to their version of that story. And then you're connected. That's how you can be connected to 20,000 people at one time from the stage, is when you're that authentic and raw about a song. And so he took an idea that we had together, and you know, there were a few little things here and there that I'd be like, maybe this or maybe that, but I mean,
yep.
it was perfectly, the conversation we had in the bar became this song.
Yep. And that's, and I last night I was just talking about that. We wouldn't be where we are without that moment though. You know, it's like capturing moments and turning them into art that people can relate to. And Ben took it another step. We're sitting in the studio where he put all the work in. He played every instrument on this record.
It was insane. He's all, Ben's okay. As a musician, Ben's all right. This guy's a monster. Did you play everything on it?
Some special compliment.
Well, hey, I was proud to be a part of it and was really, really impressed at what the guys turned this into. So I would love to hear it before I got to run off and go dad a little bit.
Oh, that's right. Okay. So we got to let Brett go dad. But first, we are going to debut the world premiere of One Day Someday by Elvis Munro, co-written by Brett Young. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
And by the way, this is the first time I'm going to hear it.
In a crowded room, some random town, I look up from my boots, I have my watson upside down. With my guitar in hand, I croon out a favorite tune, hoping she looks my way and she feels the way I do. She's my one day someday. Glad I had her go to call her baby. One day someday, she's gonna call me baby, gonna have a family. I can see it in her eyes. Our future's all so bright. She's my wonder someday. Heel toe, heel toe. She's dancing in my heart. If I close my eyes real tight, we're not that far apart. We turn the lights down low, live out the same old dream. We listen to some old school country. She's singing along with me. She's my wanted someday. Gotta have her, gonna call her baby. Wanted someday. She's gonna call me baby, gonna have a family. I can see it in her eyes. Our future's all so bright. Gonna wake up by your side. Wanted someday. Fiction girl. Somewhere in this world, her image lives within me strong, like a photograph I'm holding on to her. 'Cause she and I belong. But she's somewhere out there staring at the same old stars and wondering if I'm her. One day, someday, fiction girl. She's my one day, someday. She's my wanted someday. Gotta have her, gonna call her baby. Wanted someday. She's gonna call me baby, gonna have a family. I can see it in her eyes. Our future's all so bright. Gonna wake up by your side. Wanted someday. She's my one day someday. Fiction girl. One day, someday.
Dang, boys.
Dude.
Hey.
Yeah. We're good.
Eebie-jeebies. There it is. One Day, Someday by Elvis Monroe. The world debut of that. Ah, I still got the heebies, man. So good. So good. And you guys, I can't even express the gratitude and appreciation and honor I have that you bestowed that gift. I mean, to two fat guys from Oregon doing a podcast. Okay, one fat guy. Nick's pretty ripped. And Stormy for being a part of this as well. Just
it's fantastic. I had the privilege of hearing it a couple of times before today, and it's so cool. I was playing it yesterday, and my wife walks by, and she is the harshest critic for music. I mean, I play her stuff all the time, you know, people send or whatever. So listen to this one, and she kind of went, wait, who's that? I said,
oh, wow.
It's Elvis Monroe, and a song co-wrote with Brett Young. And she's like, I don't know what that is, but I like it. And she goes, she was meeting. I don't know what Elvis Monroe is, but I like this song. And she was like,
thank you.
Melodically, everything is cool. I couldn't help, Ben, and tell me if I'm way off, but there seems to be a tiny bit of inspiration from like almost a countrified Wheel in the Sky from Journey going on.
Little do. Ooh, right?
Wow.
Little do.
You know what? I would never have. Honestly, I would never have thought of that association, but I would be lying if I said I didn't grow up in the. I mean, I did grow up in the era of bands like Journey and Def Leppard. I used to look at the guitar player from Def Leppard, Phil, and they were my favorite band as a kid. And a funny story going to, I can't believe you said Journey. So I found a cassette tape when I was in high school. It was just this tape that someone had ripped the sticker off. It was a black cassette tape. And I put it in my little blaster, and I fell in love with this band. Had no idea what the band was. Every song was amazing. As it turns out, it was Journey. Wow. So in Australia, where I grew up in a tiny, tiny country town where there's 80 houses and one shop. And we didn't really have radio. We didn't really have TV and anything that I got, like when I fell in love with the guitar, I found out about a magazine called Guitar World and Guitar Player. So I had to drive like 30 miles into town and order the magazines, and they would take about 6 months to come. I think someone sailed them on a little yacht, you know, and by the time they came, I would just like, I would soak it all in. I'd read about all these bands and all this music and stuff like that. And I was listening to this record that I had no idea was Journey. I'm like, one day I'll find out what band this is. And I got to tell that story to Neil Sean, actually. We became friends. Wow. And it was pretty cool to be associated with something that's that
that great and classic, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's awesome.
Tell your wife, thank you.
Yeah.
Tell your wife,
thank you. Your wife has impeccable taste.
But even the whole melody, everything just is kind of this, like, almost like telling a Western tale of a love song. It's just kind of got a whole wide open space, and it's just cool.
You know, it's funny on that point, Stormy, talking about the writing process. Brett and I were discussing the production because it's my job. You know, I bring these ideas out of here and out of here, take what Brett's feeling, what Brian's feeling, what ultimately what I'm feeling, and make it come out of the speakers. And the feeling that I wanted, that I really was chasing on this song, was if you're on an old dusty horse, just kind of clip-clop.
That's exactly what it feels. You nailed
it. Like the Western movie, you know, you got the girl, you're riding off. That was exactly what I was chasing.
Well, you
and
got it.
You think you're like that. You just made my day, and I think we became best friends.
Well, and I don't know if that was the third version. Last night we finished mixing again. Tom Fletcher, who he produced
Don Henley, Ozzy Toto.
Wow.
He did the Dune movie with Brian Eno. I mean, a lot of unknown bands that may or may not make it.
We built a studio like just down the hall, a mixing studio. And he's in there. So last night he made some last minute tweaks for us. And we just said, we kind of went one direction, the first song we sent you. And then all the way to last night, about 9 o'clock at night, we finished that version right there. And we hope you enjoyed. It's
great
for us. We're two guys that we've never been on a label with this project, and we've never even had management. But we find ourselves out on the road with guys like Three Doors Down. Joe Nichols has taken us under his wing and taken us out. When the pandemic happened, we were out with Joe. And it's just it's the coolest thing to be able to play with all these different artists. I remember, you know what? It was Montgomery Gentry. Troy Gentry actually saw us play for the first time and cornered me in the...
No
in
doubt he loved you.
He was like, hey... No doubt. Who writes your songs? And we looked at each other and we went, we do. And he goes, oh man, he's like, there's no one like you in country music. And he goes, the closest thing to you, he's pointing at me, he goes, is me.
Yeah.
And we were playing with Love and Theft, Randy Houser, and Montgomery Gentry for our very first country show. And for him to come early and watch us play, he stood behind the board. He took us under his wing as well, and he started putting us on shows and taking us out. We were encore doing the encore songs with him, and we were just saddened. We were out on tour when we heard the news.
We were in Oregon.
Yeah. And when we heard the news, and that guy, it was really sad, but I was really just like amazed that he took to us so early on in our career.
Well, he does not like formula. He did not like doing things the conventional way. I mean, when they came in with Hillbilly Shoes, the very first song that they came slamming with, I mean, it slapped me in the face. I knew that. I mean, it was nobody sounded like them at the time.
No one.
And so what he said is the truth. It's like, I haven't heard this sound out of country music, and it's really refreshing. It's really nice to hear this vibe and the sound and the craftsmanship of the lyrics, the melody, the production. It's really cool. Yeah. Troy was important to me too. Troy and Eddie, they've been buddies for years. And I actually got to speak at Troy's funeral. So it was a tragic day.
I watched the opera that day, the Opry, because, you know, we couldn't be there, but he was important to us, and he was important to giving us a chance. Sure. Joe Nichols, of all people, we laugh because Joe's like family to us, and he didn't want to like us in the beginning because we both came from, I came from the rock world and Ben came from Lifehouse. And he's like, he literally said, I was hearing about you. I didn't want anything to do with you guys. And then one day he's like, let's go to lunch. And we went to lunch and we have not been apart since. He just hit us up when he heard this song and said, I have 20 shows. Let's see where you fit.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really neat. And
it's been an amazing embrace because, you know, we did come from the rock world, you know, the rock and pop world for me. And when we started Elvis Monroe, I was at the height of Lifehouse too. So we were like, man, it was a juggle. And for us, it was something that, and it still is, it's a very, very honest project. Like, it's two best friends. We don't play by the rules, you know, not intentionally. We're just doing it our way, you know? And I always feel on a production level and a sound level, if you're trying to be somebody else, you're already 2 years behind, you know? And we just decided not to, we just wanted to do what we wanted to do and make a record that, especially with this new record we're making, this is the first one out of this batch that people get to hear. We wanted to be really honest with ourselves. Like, I want to make a record that it doesn't have any rules. I don't have to answer to anybody other than myself and this guy. And then seeing your reaction
was,
that's right. Well, you're on the right path. We get tired of stuff that's going on, you know, in the genre. So it's like when something sticks out, something goes, whoa, that's a new sound. That's a new thing going on. And it's attractive to people like who do this for a living and to fans who listen to music for their life. You know, they want something that is refreshing and new. So thank you for bringing it. That's cool.
You got a
fellow Aussie named Keith Urban who kind of follows the same model you're going after.
Man, I was good enough to, we played the RMA Awards when I was in Lifehouse and Keith was playing, and I was a big Keith Urban fan. And what America doesn't know is Keith Urban is Aussie pub rock with banjos. Right. You know, so when I first heard his, you know, his earlier hits, I was like, no one over here knows what he's doing, but I do. And I got to meet the guy, you know. Yeah. So I just walked on stage during his sound check. I said, I had to meet the other Aussie on the bill. And he was the nicest guy. We chatted for 10 minutes. He held the whole sound check up and he goes, can you please come to dinner with me tonight? So I ended up going to dinner with him. It was actually here in Las Vegas, ironically, where we now live. And, Just an amazing dude, like very down home, very Australian. Sure. And I'm a huge fan. The records that he started putting out, the Ripcord record and the Graffiti U, where he's pushing the envelope to different areas, really inspire me because I love what he's doing because he's outside the box.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, it's you're following a good model.
Right. And with Brett too, like going back to the story with Sleep Without You, I was in my car at 4 a.m. on the corner of Harmon and Las Vegas Boulevard. Brett and I were talking. We were solving the problems of the world, you know. And he said, hey, Bart, I got my demo here. You want to hear it? I said, I do. And he goes, they're just roughs right now. And I'm a massive Dan Huff fan, you know. I mean, who wouldn't be? From his early days in Giant all the way through, you know. What a monster guitar player. And
it was, you know that. I'm a believer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, buddy. So Brett played me Sleep Without You, and then he played me a couple of the other tunes, which have now, you know, history become number one hits. I looked at Brett with goosebumps on my arms, and I said, buddy, if the label doesn't mess it up, I think you got hits. Like, I really believe it. I believe you've got it. I can't believe I was the first one to hear this with you. Almost a year to the day later, his song was number one, and we were playing together a little show in Vegas.
Yeah, we were
at Stoney's Rock and Country.
Yeah. Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. And it was just an amazing ride to see somebody that deserved it so much. And as you can tell, Stormy, I mean, you're good friends with Brett as we are. Yeah. He's the same dude before he was Brett Young. He's going to be the same dude long time after he's Brett Young. And
amazing guy.
He's an amazing guy, and he's a humble guy, but he's the real deal. So for us being around people like that, people like yourself, you're obviously passionate about what you do. Mm. You've been around it a long time, and we appreciate that, man. We're just so lucky to have those people in our lives, you know?
Yeah, I met Brett up in the foundation room up there at the top of the Mandalay, the House of Blues, you know, it overlooks everything. And there's a after party for Route 91. And it was the ACMs. It wasn't Route 90. It was long before that. Yeah. It was the ACMs. Yeah. And we just hung out and we hit it off instantly. And he was just getting going. And it was just a really genuine friendship first between us.
That's awesome.
It's always been that way. He's just a good dude.
Yeah. And he's a great friend. Like, you know, outside of music and business and writing songs, you know, if ever I, you know, we all have those moments where you need to talk to a mate, you know, and
yeah.
I can pick up the phone and call him and he can be in the middle of whatever. And he'll always find time for the people that are in his circle. You know, it's pretty amazing.
As a friend of his, fellow friend of his, you got to help me out with this. He's been kind enough to invite me to go golfing about 10 times. And I've found a way to turn him down every time because I don't have the heart to tell him that I don't play golf.
You better learn, Stormy. That's simple.
If I was allowed to speak in Australian, I'd tell you the game you should play. But I'll text you that on the side.
So, there you go. Perfect.
The advice, you know, I'll send you a video about our golf experience.
Yeah, good deal.
But hey, we don't want to dominate this podcast. I know that you guys got some dad talk going between that.
Dominate.
What's that?
This is so.
You guys are all good. If you want to keep talking,
Oh no!
I'm
a huge fan of the highway and where I heard Brett's song was on the highway for the very first time. So that was a big deal.
Well, hang on a second. I'm gonna go a step further than that. Brian, just I'm gonna say it in Australia. Okay. It's been a dream of ours to actually be on the highway.
For 5 years.
You know, we've always wanted to be. You know, we believe. In their process, you know, I think it's one of the few stations that really plays music because they love it, you know, it's inspiring because you hear stuff that you don't hear everywhere else. And then you hear it later, like Brett was saying, they're always first to the punch. So I believed one day we'd get a shot. I believe one day we'd get a chance. You never know. Maybe it'll happen.
George Briner took us to lunch one day. In fact, he texted
us. Love that, man.
Yeah. Briner asked us, tell me what Stormy thinks of the song. And this is last night at about 11 o'clock. I get it.
Well, now you can tell him.
Yeah. And so, and I don't know if you know JoJo Turnbow.
Oh yeah.
JoJo texts him and then texts me his opinion about the song. And he said, don't tell Stormy, but I want to know what he thinks. And his was, this is spot on. You guys, this is a hit, and it's really cool. An earworm because I can't stop singing.
That's what my wife said too, and I agree. It's got that the melodic thing in there. It's just so freaking infectious. It's so good,
Stormy.
One day, someday.
Sorry.
Thank you.
No.
As the morning guy on the highway, what you know, and I'm a radio guy myself. Been doing it 20 years. Obviously, not at the level that you're at, but. How are you programmer or director? Do you have any say in what gets played in rotation,
we do have it's a pretty strong and narrow gate into the playlist. And it's run by our program director. So it's like we could be suggestive and we can pull a trump card from time to time. It was something we truly, you know, like this has to be on the highway, and then he'll still say no. And then we have to beg again.
Right.
But it's like if it's good, it's got the chance. That's it. It's like, that's what I think. It's like, we don't want to hear a song and go, oh, that's not bad, and give it a shot on the highway. That's not the way we're looking for.
I got to tell you a story. So this is kind of funny because it's the first time I went out to, I want to say it was the radio, you know, with what's it called?
Radio Retreat or whatever.
Yeah, no, the big
CRS, big, Country Radio CRS. Seminar.
Yeah, so like I just jumped on a plane, no joke. Last minute, a buddy of mine, Jared Blake, who was playing on the highway, goes, hey, dude, I got a buddy pass. Why don't you come out and just walk around and do your thing? So the night before, I emailed John Marks, who used to be at the highway.
The old program director. Yeah.
Right. And so I emailed him. I don't know him. He doesn't know me. He goes, why don't you come by the studio? I'd love to meet you. I've heard about you. And I went, are you kidding me? Because at the time we started this band, Matt Nelson named it, played bass in the band. Ryan McMillan was playing drums from Matchbox 20. And David Pichette from Emerson Drive was on fiddle. That was Elvis Monroe until everybody got way too busy and we just kept it going. Well, at the time, so he brings me in and we hit it off. John and I are in one of the studios just talking music and whatever. And we hadn't even recorded yet. And I just wanted to meet him. So he goes, I want you to meet my wife, Brian, and she's coming down to have breakfast here. We have breakfast being delivered.
And she's as tough as my wife on music. So she's,
really,
oh my God, Colleen is she's hard, hard on music. She really is the brains behind John Marks.
So, well, I get a chance to meet her. We hit it off, and then he goes, "Hey, why don't you stick around? I have a there's an artist playing in the room. You know that little room you guys have.
Yep.
And it was Casey Musgraves.
Oh yeah,
and she's performing in there." And I said, I have lunch with George Briner, and I don't want to walk out on their show. He goes, put you in the back. You got to check it out. And I tell George, hey, I may be a little bit late. Come pick me up. And he goes, where are you at? I said, I'm with John Marks. He goes, how'd you land there? I said, I just emailed him and I'm here. So we never had the chance to play him anything before he left and went to Spotify.
That's an amazing story.
I have no
story.
Way to even get him this
so
song.
So you've already been, you haven't been on the highway, but you've been in the highway.
In the highway. But we never had anything to play for him at the time. And then he left and went to Spotify, and I had no way of even contacting him.
Well, you know, there's timing for everything. There's timing for everything. Yeah, that's a great story. Timing.
As a former program director myself, granted, it was a classic rock station, but Stormy, I endorse One Day Someday, and I think it should be played on the highway. Just saying.
All right, there you go. We got a thumbs up right there. I love it. It's something I'm definitely going to pursue 100%.
We appreciate that. Thank you. And we don't mean to put you on the spot, but we
I tell you, I don't care if we're on a podcast or not. I would tell you and go,
Thank you. Thank you.
You know what? I believe him.
I do.
You know, that's all. And
when you've been doing this long enough, and it's not hard. It really isn't, right?
It doesn't do an artist any good to lie to them.
Yes.
I'll tell you, George and JoJo do the same thing with us. The only time either one of them stepped up, we had Blue Collar Man, and that was our big first run. JoJo picked the song, said, go on and record it. We ran through all the notes. He was the one who gave us the notes on this song to turn it in today. And it wasn't, 9 o'clock at night, he's freaking out because we were doing all the things that he asked us to do. But to stay to us, he goes, I want you to be you. I'm just asking you to just do these little tweaks for me. If you just value what I'm saying. And we're like, of course we do. Because he put us on the radio. Remember, we were in tears. Yeah. You were crying and I was shaking. Because we went to his office, and this was with a song called Blue Collar Man. We walk in, he goes, okay, did you do what I asked you to do? And we went, we think so. So he plays it, and he goes, starts doing this thing. Now go down to your car, turn on the radio. Mm-hmm. And then he had Big D and Double L, and both of them, come in and announce us being added to 95.5 The Bull.
That's amazing.
Right there in that moment, he's crying, I'm shaking, and that launched everything for us. And that was 4 years ago now, and we found ourselves out on tour on a bus. A guy named Chuck Capello, a truck driver out of Boston, loved the song, became a fan, called us on Christmas Eve and said, what can I do? And I said, just support us, man, thank you. And he goes, no, I got to do one more. And he bought us a bus, provided us with the driver, and put us on tour.
That is unbelievable.
It was amazing, man.
It really was.
Hey, when we bring Elvis Monroe to Southern Oregon, it's awesome to have the big bus pull up in front of a little bar that they play at for us. That's like the coolest thing. It's like, holy God, you got the biggest band in the world. And it's like, we live in a really small town. So it's,
you know why it's always awesome. That story more than most, you guys, is... and Stormy on my end of things, when we hear that from the band, you guys are still so humble and appreciative of when that happens. And the fact that you're on tears because you got played on the radio, that makes my job when I do radio. That's what it's for.
Yeah. It's an amazing feeling, man. It's an amazing feeling. So for me, I've played in numerous really big bands with lots of hits, you know, Savage Garden, Vertical Horizon, Lifehouse, Brett, Joe, Love and Theft, you know, Tal Bachman, blah, blah, blah. I think I just dropped something.
Yeah, I know.
Every band you've been in is what you just dropped.
This was the first time that we trusted our vision. We did it as best friends. And I sat in my car and I listened to something that we truly made
We broke all the rules. We did it our way, and people believed in it. And the one thing that is amazing with Elvis is, I'm sorry if you can hear a V8 screaming in the background. Yeah, we're in a hot rod shop, by the way. So,
great place for a recording studio.
The challenges of tracking those acoustic guitars
at night
in amongst the ripping V8s anyway. So the biggest challenge with Elvis Monroe was we're at the height of Lifehouse when this thing started taking off. And people would come see us play, and they would pull me aside later, and they would say, "Hey, I like this better than Lifehouse." And I would kind of like just go, "Yeah, cool, man, whatever." Crazy. And in my head, I'm thinking my friends are just trying to be nice,
right?
You know. But then after 2 or 3 years, I never really understood what they were saying because I just kind of took it with a grain of salt. I didn't really believe them.
Yeah.
But when I started seeing people that I didn't know showing up to the shows, I've never had seen or been part of a reaction, a genuine reaction. When we do what we do together in front of a live audience,
8,000, 9,000
with people that have never heard our song, that are not there to see us,
right. They sing along.
We win. Time and time again, and to try and translate that to come out of the speakers on a radio has been the
challenge.
The 20-cent question.
It's been the challenge.
You know what I mean? So it's, you know,
that there's that disconnect. We can stand in front of 8,000 people. I have a video of us with Gavin DeGraw and Brett Young, and the place is sold out, and Brett standing side of stage watching these people sing along to three of our songs. They're not covers. And he's like, "How do you do that? This is so cool." But we were trying to get that when you hear a song for the very first time and have them connect like that to the music like they do to us when we play live. And we're doing it acoustic. It was just us on stage having that reaction. So for us, it's trying to capture that. And today was, you made our day, man. Thank you so much.
That's great. Thank you for sharing the song. I'm a junkie. I'm an absolute addict for new music. You keep writing them and keep recording them, keep sending them.
We will. And thank you. You know what? We're going to let you guys get at it. Thank you for supporting these guys. They've been supporting us for years, bringing us to Oregon, doing shows. They're great guys. And we're helping them get even more names on the show. And like Randy Couture is one of our buddies.
It's fantastic. It's I loved it. I was attracted to it instantly. So this is cool.
They made a world. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys, man. Don't go anywhere though.
Thank you so much, guys.
Please. Okay, hey, you guys talk. You got somewhere to go.
You guys talk. We're going to hang out and watch.
You know, I've been making lots of comparisons. The comparison too that I think about the stories you just told, I think of Johnny and Donnie Van Zant when they did their duo together after there was success with 38 Special and Lynyrd Skynyrd respectively, and then coming together as brothers and doing a very unique, very their own project, which I thought was just very cool. And they did the same thing, kind of the same journey. And also Darius Rucker leaving Hootie and the Blowfish and coming over to Nashville and doing it purely country and doing it his own way. He cried the first day he heard his song on country radio. This is a guy that sold 11 billion albums.
Yeah, 11 billion.
And he's heard his songs on repeat for, you know, the last 20 years, but it was hearing his song on country radio that really emotionally affected him. It was pretty cool.
He's a sweetheart of a guy. When I met him, it was by accident. No joke. I got to tell this story. I couldn't make this up in a movie if I wanted to. And Darius and I share this story. I'm sitting at the House of Blues restaurant here in Las Vegas. And this beautiful girl walks by and she calls me Elvis. Hi, Elvis. And I was like, hey, you know.
Darius is going, I get that all the time.
Yeah, exactly. She calls me over to the table. They introduce me to her girl. And I'm wearing my welder up hat, right? I have her now. And she goes, hey, I Elvis, I want to introduce you to my friend. And by the way, that's Steve Darnell, my ex-boyfriend, jokingly. And I'm like, oh, let me start by saying, my name's Brian. And she goes, wait, what? I thought your name was, I go, it's like being in a band called Hootie and the Blowfish. And your name is, and I turn and this shadow is standing, a figure is standing next to me, and it's Darius. And he goes, finish your story. And they said, and they call you, your name's Darius.
That was a great imitation, by the way.
They call you Hootie. And he goes, Dorinda hugs her. Good to see you. He was there to meet them. And then he goes, Brian, that's crazy. He goes, I got called Hootie three times walking through the door. Right. And I start laughing. And I'm like, yeah, I get called Elvis. I go, but being named Brian, I go, it's okay that people call me Elvis. Elvis. You know? And so he asked me to sit down. And I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. It's nice to meet you. I leave. I left my card at the table. I come back and get my card. And he goes, now you have to sit down with me. And I said, I already ate, but I'm going to have this right here just to say I had a meal with you, jokingly. And I stuck around for like 10, 15 minutes, and then I left. And then I saw him do a show, and I was front row, and he grabbed me during the show and said, don't leave. Let's go have drinks. And I hung out with him, and we've been friends ever since. So it's
He's a good dude, man. He's a great,
great
dude.
Guy. Great guy.
Yeah, man, this has been such a pleasure to meet you guys officially. This is
too. Thank you.
This
well,
awesome.
Nick, you guys, you got tons of questions for this guy. Please fire away.
Yeah.
He's going to watch.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. I'm going to throw this out there. One last thing regarding One Day Someday. Now, I also have a radio station. It's called Pirate Radio, P-Y-R-A-T-E Radio. I was sick of corporate radio and everyone telling me how to do things when I thought and knew that I could do them better. You know what I'm talking about, Stormy, I think. But anywho, it's had some success. We've got like 100,000 listeners worldwide doing okay. Starting Friday, your song's in rotation, period. It's going to play twice.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's what I'm doing on my end.
Thank you, sir.
I challenge you to do better.
Wow. All right. The gauntlet has been laid down. That is great.
That's right.
I actually used to work for the other pirate radio in Los Angeles.
Oh, man. 97.1 Pirate LA. That was one of my.
No, actually, it was 100.3.
100.3. That's correct. 97.1 was KLSX.
Yeah. Yep. 100.3.
That was like 1989, 92, give or
that's
take.
That's it. I was there from 89 to 92.
That was I was so bummed out when that radio station stopped because, yep. I mean, all we had was KNAC, which was badass. Yeah. And then, and of course, K-Rock, and Pirate. It's just, we loved it. It was so good.
Well, CNN was in the same building and I was working at CNN and I heard that Pirate moved in. And so they were still trying to play it off like they were broadcasting from a barge off Catalina Island. they were literally three stories above me at CNN. And so I just barged through the doors and said, I'm working here. I don't care what you say. And
they're trying to never left Caroline.
Never left. And it was an incredible education for a young 19-year-old kid to because that was the biggest Westwood One station in the country, and it was there was a lot of pressure on it. So seeing the high level corporate tension going on, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, in Tulsa or some other towns in Southern California where I was working radio, it's a little looser. But you got in that building, and it was no joke.
Now, were you a jock?
No, I was actually just promotions and did voices and did. This was the A of the A of the A of the A that were working there, and there, right. It was yeah. So. And I was the D of the D of the D's.
And, you gotta start somewhere, man.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. But real quick, the friendship that I formed there, just talk about the, you know, the journeys through music and genres. I met Brett Michaels when Poison was rocking, and we got to be buddies then. And it was a bunch of different lifestyle too. It was a crazy lifestyle. And flash forward years later, he comes to Nashville and he's recording a country album. And we meet at the opening of Planet Hollywood again. And I go, Brett, what are you doing here? He's like, Stormy, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm working for Nashville Network. I'm doing TV, country music news. He goes, well, I'm recording a country record. We should work together. I'm like, absolutely. And we've been friends ever since. And so it's just been a really cool journey to go on multi-genre quest with Brett Michaels,
right?
The past few decades.
Do your, you say your kids are in their 20s, college one still in. Yeah. Do they realize that dad's a superstar, or is it dad's just dad?
The interesting thing is they never cared. They still probably never care, but the older one, his friends are realizing in college, it can actually help the game a little bit.
Right.
You know, if they do a little name drop. And just kinda, so there, it's amazing. My son doesn't use it, but his friends do.
Well, those are smart friends.
You know who his dad is? But no, they've never cared. They've been on every stage you could think of. I mean, speaking of Montgomery Gentry, my youngest son introduced Montgomery Gentry on stage at Nissan Stadium in Nashville into the microphone. Ladies and gentlemen, Montgomery Gentry. And it was just another day for him. He walked across the stage and high-fived Charlie Daniels in front of
right?
40,000 people. And Charlie just laughed and looked at me. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't help it. But there were no boundaries to these kids because they grew up in all access all the time. AAA, as they call it in Australia, you know, access all areas. And that's the life they grew up in. So I don't think they take it for granted. I think they're just finally realizing how cool their childhood was.
Yeah. You know, same scenario with me. My kid was my son, my first son. Well, I only have one son. But anyway, my firstborn kid. He's 10 years old now. When he was a year and a half, 2 years old, I brought him on stage when we introduced A Puddle of Mud. And that's not something I really want to. I got some great pictures out of it. But if once, you know, dude got drunk and fell off the stage and the show had to end because, you know, Puddle of Mud.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I don't remember that, Nick.
I do.
Any show. The pictures are great, but I don't want that. You know, I'm glad he was young enough to not remember what happened at his first appearance on stage with dad.
Yeah. I've got some, he's actually 17 now. He's a drummer at Grants Pass High School for the band. I've been a concert promoter for about 20 years. So my kids are like way into music. My daughter like records stuff and does acoustic songs. So her favorite artist is Andy Grammer. And I ended up becoming friends with him a few years ago. So every time he's in town, he texts and he's like, hey, you want to bring your daughter out? She, you know, she sends her CDs and stuff all the time. And so she's doing Andy Grammer covers now and like they're chatting and it's a kind of a cool thing. But my son got to meet Matt Sorum when Hollywood Vampires came to Jacksonville. So he was super stoked on that. He's like, dude, we did a Guns N' Roses thing in the band and I got to meet the drummer. I'm like,
It's cool. It's good.
It's a lot of fun being part of this and kind of showing the kids, hey, they're just normal people. They get up and they play in front of thousands, hundreds of thousands, but they're just normal guys at the end of the day.
Yeah, they're not impressed. They're not starstruck by any means.
No,
my kids are.
Well, I don't know. My son was starstruck. He was like, it's the Guns N' Roses drummer. And I was stoked that he knew that. So
now Ryan Tannehill shows up and gives him a high five. Then they become starstruck. They're a sports superstar. Those are their idols. So the hockey players and football and that kind of thing. So they meet one of those guys. Then it's a totally different game. Mm-hmm. They can meet Garth Brooks and be like, oh, hey.
Yeah, right.
Right.
LeBron James pulls up.
Game over.
Exactly.
Oh, take it for granted. That's something, you know, I don't fanboy much anymore. I did when I first started doing radio and I got a big head. Stormy, did you get a big head like first year in the business?
I got called on the carpet by a really dear friend of mine. Speaking of Garth Brooks, who used to work for Garth Brooks as a publicist. And we went out to lunch and he goes, Stormy, I think you need to come back down to earth just a couple of notches. And it was like, it was a great talk. I didn't realize I was doing it, but I went, wow. Yeah. Everything you're saying is accurate. And I think I was just caught up in bullshit, you know? Yeah. And it's like, when you realize it's bullshit, it's easy to clear the fog and get back to what's real, but it is so easy to get caught in that fog for a little while. As long as it's a little while, it's all right. But then you got to come back because you almost have to feel that to know you never want to go there again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you're so young, it's like so new at it, and all of a sudden you're so popular and everyone wants to talk to you. And I'm so glad I got past that hump. But I was mentioning, I don't fanboy hardly ever, you know. Again,
I made a rule that if I ever get to the point where I am not starstruck or in awe of what these artists are doing, I've got to get out.
Okay.
Because I'm not doing my job. My job is to be the conduit between the music and the fans through the artists. And if I'm not doing my job to connect those dots because I'm not as interested as I used to be, it is time to hand the baton over and just please somebody else run with this.
Right.
But fortunately, that has not gone away yet.
That's amazing.
And I don't like to think that that's where the point I'm making when I say fanboy much. I don't, it used to be just, oh my gosh, where it was uncomfortable and I couldn't be the professional that I was supposed to be because I was acting like a 12-year-old, you know, girl, and the Beatles are in the 60s, you know, what, But I did fanboy a little bit when the vampires did come at that show a couple years ago.
That was so cool.
Johnny Depp was in the house. And my lady, she's like, oh, my God, please let me meet him. Please let me meet him. I have to meet Johnny. I have to meet Johnny. Like, of course, that's what we can do. And we got back there. There's Johnny. And then, of course, she looks at me, looks at him, looks at me, looks at him, and goes, can I kiss him? Baby girl, you're coming home with me tonight. And if this is going to help out my plight, go ahead. You kiss away as long as, you know, sure. If Johnny's cool with it, it's fine. And he was. He got a little, but that star level power, movie star right there, that was a little, yeah, that's the last time I've been overly nervous as a 40-year-old man.
Well, I think you guys jump in though. Johnny was like such a sweet guy too, though. Like, yeah, that's so nice.
Yeah, he's cool.
And then Alice Cooper, oh my God, he was cool.
And a great golfer.
there's a thing you all know it. You feel it. You felt it with Johnny Depp. There's also an it factor with stars that, I mean, you could have your back to the door and you would know exactly who walked through that door just by the energy that they carry with them, you know? And there's just certain people that have this aura that, I mean, like Dolly Parton, Reba, Garth, George Strait, Alan Jackson, they walk into a room, you know, they've walked into a room. And it's just, I think that there's great value to that. And I don't think they're, it's not fake. It's not an act. It's just, they have something and an energy source that they're drawing from that other people do not. And it's just, is what you want to call them, normal people. They might be normal people, but they've got something. They got an extra gear and I don't know how you define it. I've been trying to define it my entire career, but there's very few people that have that it factor. And it will suck the air out of your lungs for a minute when you see someone, you turn around and go, holy wow. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Joe Montana walked into an event I was hosting and it was one of those things. I just went, "Hi, Mr. Montana." And he goes, "Do you know where the bathroom is?" "Yes, come with me, sir. Come with me, sir."
Are you a big football fan, Stormy?
Huge football fan.
Who's your team?
Northwest fans will be very happy that all growing up, my number one team was the Seattle Seahawks. And so, Seattle Seahawks. And even when they were in the witness protection program of the NFL, and all I got to see was the box score in the newspaper. They were never on television, you know, where I was growing up in Oklahoma and Massachusetts. Margin days. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was just Cortez Kennedy and the old timers and
the Boz.
Well, that was, see, as an Oklahoma State fan, Brian Bosworth played for OU. So when he went from OU to my favorite NFL football team, it was very frustrating for me.
Then he got run over by one of my favorite football.
One of my favorite highlights in NFL history.
Who's that?
Raiders,
Bo Jackson, yeah.
Yeah, Bo Jackson steamrolled Brian Bosworth on the goal line in a game. And it basically ended Brian Bosworth's career. I don't think it was because of physical injury, but it pride.
Oh, yeah.
Pride.
No, right. Yeah.
Wow, that's the greatest running back in the history of the world, most likely. You know, that's what happens.
But yeah, now that I'm in Nashville, Tennessee Titans are you know, tied with the Seattle Seahawks for my love.
There you go.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Got the Seahawks helmet here.
Oh, yeah. You know, being from the Pacific Northwest there, Oregon, growing up there, Seattle was the only team that we had. So,
right.
Yeah, we had a cheer for Seattle.
But Oakland is closer.
You know, the only time I ever messed up the national anthem was it was 2 years ago before all this. I get a call and I talked to Brett and Gavin about singing the national anthem. And we all had these moments where we totally screwed them up. And I look in the room and I just get introduced to Mike Ditka, Herschel Walker, Mean Joe Green, Howie Long. I'm freaking out. And I got so nervous. I was totally fine until they walked up to me right before I went to go sing. And then I think I mumbled like a line and a half and then recovered. And then I told Brett, and Brett's like, oh man, when I did that at,
that's a hot song to sing.
The Packers Stadium, you know, like at Lambeau Field, he said, do you want the lyrics? No, I don't need the lyrics. And he said, halfway through, he's like, where are the lyrics?
Yeah. Your mind plays games with you with that song.
It does. Just,
yeah. I don't know how, but it does. We call
the moment quicksand.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly
the first time as an Australian, I think I just like to proudly say this should have got me a green card. I'm just throwing it out there. But I the singer from Lifehouse was asked to play the national anthem for the Nationals in DC. I mean,
oh boy,
more American.
Triple M.
He said no because he didn't want to do it. So the manager said, hey, can you do it? I'm like, I'm not going to sing it, but but sure, I'll play it like Hendrix style. And yeah. He goes, that'd be great. No problem. Not even a thought in my mind because that's what we do, you know? So we flew into D.C. and I'm sitting in my hotel room kind of working out how I'm going to roadmap this thing. And I open the window and I look out the hotel window and I can see National Stadium. And it became very real all of a sudden. I was just
he doesn't
like,
have the band die behind.
Well, this, I'm going to get to that. So I've been playing in front of, you know, the biggest crowd I played in front of is 550,000 people. Right. You know, so big crowds I'm not a stranger to. I wasn't intimidated by the arena because we do it every day. It was just a weird thought of like, okay, this is something I haven't done. Mm-hmm. When I sound checked it during the day, I've got my tech and my crew and the guys that, you know, throwing balls around the field and hearing your guitar cranking through this thing. It's pretty amazing experience. Now, game time comes. We're all standing down right by my home plate and they announce me to walk out and play the national anthem. And when I'm walking out and my band's not coming with me. And I get out there and I turn around and all the three of them are staring at me. Bryce, Jason, and Ricky are staring at me. There's 80,000 people in the arena. And I play the first line. And in that moment.
Quicksand.
And I look down and I'm like, what is this thing in my hand? Why the fuck am I standing out here? Like I had a moment of complete. Like, I just hope the ground swallows me up.
You're watching it fade away, like just like,
oh my god,
like Jack sinking in the Titanic when he goes into the abyss. Like that's just like that's the national anthem, just slowly sinking into the depths.
Man, it was like that toy where the battery's getting low, like it's fading. And all of a sudden, I get plugged back in, and off we go. But it was. It's that moment, but going back to your point, Stormy, about when you know somebody walks in a room, there's a lot of people that have had 5 minutes in the sun, mm-hmm. you know, but I really believe the guys that you've been referencing, those true superstars, you know, guys like Brett, you know, I think it comes down to one thing. Guys like yourself, like you said, you got to step away when it's not inspiring to you. So I really feel it's a very, very similar parallel for performers. Like they're the way they are because they're genuine. They're mm-hmm. real. They're not trying to be anyone. They're not trying to have a persona. They're just being themselves really and truly to their heart.
The rest of us have created the superstar.
Exactly.
We've made them superstars. Right. Yep. They've just been themselves so authentic that maybe we're so used to seeing BS from people that to see maybe true authenticity is that it factor that we may be onto something here.
I believe that. And that's why those people have staying power.
Yeah.
That's why they're genuinely, they are the greatest of the great because they're real.
You know, my first trip to Nashville ever, Blair Gardner actually made it happen for me and my brother to go out there and he's a buddy and he was like, hey, you got to come out. Cause he was doing a radio show in California. I lived in Hollywood. And
after midnight.
Yeah. So he'd invited me up a couple of times and he's like to watch people perform. I remember Brian White, I think he performed Shania Twain. He's like, there's this young girl coming in, you know? And I'm like, you know, this is so cool. She becomes Shania Twain. Anyway. So I go out to Nashville for the very first time and I'm with my brother and we walk into the Wild Horse Saloon and these two guys walk up to me and it's Brooks and Dunn. And I don't know who they are. I'm in the rock world, but Blair's trying to, you know, educate me, right? And my dad was a country singer. We were growing up, big old Indian. We bring my dad up on stage. If you see videos of us online, we bring my dad up on stage in front of thousands of people. So I grew up on country. And it's a long way from the backyard. But so anyway, flash forward to this thing. And I'm standing there and there's this girl on the stage auctioning off her race suit because it's the Mark Cully Foundation.
Yep.
You know, for the race.
I was in that race.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. So she's auctioning off her suit from the year before. And now this is before Tim McGraw, blah, 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 you know, all that stuff. And my brother goes, hey, that she's waving at you. She's looking at you. And I'm like, she's looking at you. I'm like, no, she's not looking at me. He goes, wave. So I wave. It's Faith Hill. Well, Faith Hill, Alan Jackson sees this and goes, who are those guys? And he points and somebody walks up and invites me and my brother down to their table. So now we're hanging out with Alan Jackson. And I'm like, Cuckoo and Sterling Marlin, Alan Jackson, Faith Hill, all these people at this table. And he invites us to be with him the next day at the race. And that's that was my moment, first time ever in Nashville. And I'm like, what the heck? This is so amazing. And so Nashville was always good to me. And every trip that I've ever done, even the last minute trips that we've done in Nashville and everything that happens when we get there. Yeah.
It's a great town.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to go to Nashville pretty soon. We're talking to Jeremy and AJ Popoff. They just moved there.
Oh, yeah.
Josh Paul from Daughtry. I was talking to him this morning and he's like, he's in Nashville. So
yeah.
We're like, maybe we should fly out.
All the cool kids live in Nashville.
That's what I'm finding.
You mean maybe Nick?
Matt Nelson, Matt and Gunner moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
And you know what, Stormy? Because this is the dad cast. I got to ask what it was like raising two boys.
Mm-hmm.
Having two boys, because Brett has two girls.
Right, Brett's got two girls, and we talk a lot. We jab each other about it too. So it's like he's like, fortunately, my girls are going to be too young for your boys. I'm like, yeah, I think that's good for us all. It's fine. It was great. I love it. I grew up in the youngest of four brothers, and so to watch the brother dynamic was not a shock to me. But but it could be frustrating too because you just want them to get along. Man, you just want brothers to get along. And it, there are spurts where they get along great. And then there's other spurts where you're just going, man, we're all living under the same roof, guys. Come on. And they're 4 years apart. So there's a little bit of a, you know, that difference. But it's been really interesting to watch. I'm just glad we haven't screwed them up. They're still alive. They're still in school. You know, they haven't been in jail yet. They're not troublemakers. They're good. They're great kids. And as parents, I think that's the only goal you have is to keep them alive until they're old enough to go on their own. And then if you do it, great. And if you don't, then I mean, it sucks.
Brother dynamic. Brothers, I'm saying it, 4 year difference between my baby girl and my son, 7, almost 11. And they fight just as often as well. It's over nothing.
It gets so old, especially in a pandemic, when everybody's locked in, you know, for this past year. It's just like there's nowhere to go.
Right.
So I have 6 kids. We just had a baby. He's 10 months old. My youngest before him. More. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into that. My youngest before the baby is 13 now. So the baby is like this, has this crazy personality. He's got to have all the attention. It's unreal. And so my 16-year-old daughter lives with me and my boys live with their mom. But so my 16-year-old and the baby are constantly at each other. It's like, I'm like, Emma, he's 10 months old. He can't even talk. Right. And he's like, dad, 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 dad. I'm like, all right, he's talking, whatever. Just let it go. You know, like he'll jump on his playpen.
You gave him a rock star name.
Yeah.
What's the name?
Yeah. So, yeah, he's a little rock star. Oasis.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
Liam the rock star. Yeah.
He's awesome.
You know, the one thing I get asked, you know, from friends who are, you know, young parents and ask me advice because I raised my kids and their mom and I were not together. My son, I adopted when he was 3 years old. So biologically he's not mine, but I'm his dad.
Sure.
And then I had my daughter. And so being a parent, being away from them, the advice that I give to my friends, and I told you this too, being a parent, I was reading somewhere that there are 10 moments in a young person's life that define who they are, the values they're going to have. And there are things that they remember, these little moments. So my goal was if I had limited time to be around my kids, and I get summers and holidays and stuff, then I wanted to be 7 out of 10 moments. I wanted to, I would pull over on the side of the road and literally go see something and take that moment and make them, you know, just like remember it. Yeah. Remember that somebody made a bad choice or somebody made a good choice, or witness something good that somebody did and go, look, I need to point this out, you know? Mm-hmm. And even if it wasn't mine, it was something that I watched you do or hearing somebody say. So as a parent, that was my goal. And
how'd you do with that?
But to have them come back at me and go, we used to hate that, Dad.
Right.
We used to hate it. But you know what? We love it now. Now they're like, thank you for taking those times. Thank you. It wasn't always just fun, because their mom would be like, oh, go be with your fun dad, you know.
Yeah, go Disneyland dad, yeah.
Exactly. Go do all the good things, you know, and go meet, you know, like my, you know, we were talking about your son, one of them taking advantage of you being Stormy. My daughter would go, Dad, please don't take offense to this, but I don't let anyone know you're my dad because I don't need enough fake friends. Now, my son would want to hang out with the band and holler out, what's up, Jessica? You know,
yeah, like, right.
Do you know her? No, but he just wanted to make sure that she saw.
You know? Oh, just to clarify, it's not my son who uses it. It's my son's friends.
Oh,
who
use it. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Exactly.
Your son's friends were smart enough to figure out, hang on a sec. Yeah. That his dad gets tickets to.
There you go.
And hey, buddy.
The last concert I went to before everything shut down was actually on campus at UT Knoxville. And it was Jason Aldean and Morgan Wallen and Riley Green. And we went backstage, and there's probably 10 of his friends that I was able to set up. And as you guys know, in the world, setting up 10 passes for anybody for anything is virtually impossible.
Crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had to borrow, steal, whatever. I mean, I leveraged all three acts against each other. I said, I got two from you, and like try to get it all. Got them all. This is after I was at fraternity parties all day. Yeah, I was that dad. You know, and then we go backstage and just watch them doing the meet and greets and all this kind of stuff and just hanging out. I'm like, my son is like, that's the way he grew up. He didn't think twice about it, but all his friends were like, what the?
That's awesome.
Exactly. Right. That's so cool.
It's funny as your kids grow. Like my son was 5 when I met him. He's turning 13 in a couple of months. Okay. And in the last couple of years, specifically the last 18 months, have been super interesting, you know, like as they become, like he was always he's got an amazing heart and the most thoughtful, greatest son ever, you know, and, you know, the dynamics of a split home, you know, yeah. Like our sure. home and our rules versus his dad's house and his dad's rules. And the dynamics of seeing a young human from 5 through to now navigate that
life
and watching him become yeah. smart, what he can do here and what he can't do there, what he can do here and what he can't do there. And trying to have that consistency to be, you know, as a stepdad, like I said, I firmly take ownership of that. He is my son and I'm a huge part in his life and a father figure for sure. But it's been just as much a learning process for me as it has mm-hmm. for him. You know, and you learn every day, you know, every single day with a 13-year-old is a new day. You know, it's like you want to hang out with them, but they don't want to hang out with you. If you don't hang out with them, then you don't care. Right. but they want to be left alone. It's like
for my oldest girl. Awesome. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
My
yeah.
God.
You're lucky you don't have any teenage daughters. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah. No, I do
it's
not.
Terrible.
But a 12-year-old, our oldest when they were 12, that was the roughest go. It's just puberty, man. Puberty just will just rock a parent's world, a kid's world. Yeah. And you forget that you went through it too. You forget that you were going through those same exact, I mean, your synapses are misfiring in your brain as you're still developing, and it's just nothing is making sense. So it's just there's like a thunderstorm going on in a preteen's mind. And you forget what's going on underneath that skull. Because even though you went through it, you forget. And so it's hard to interpret and hard to understand what's going on in a.
I think we had it so much easier though. We didn't have a pandemic we were going through. We weren't stuck at home.
Absolutely, we were social media.
Yeah, no social media. Yeah, there was like, yeah, my daughter is just like all about TikTok and everything. She can't go hang out with her friends. We're still kind of locked down in Oregon here, so it's a nightmare. The world she finally got to go back to school today, so that's
cool. That's good. That's huge. Congratulations. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's been a year learning stuff and trying to figure out how to deal with a 16-year-old and make sure she's
Kids are going to come out of this on the other side. I have no idea. I have no idea what they're going to be. I have no idea what they're going to be, what the lasting effects is going to be emotionally on depression, on just social skills. I mean, how are people going to function? There's so many unknowns on the other side of this that it's just going to be, it's going to be crazy for parents of young kids. It's the challenge of being a parent is going up about 8 different notches.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is be there for them, listen to them. So
it's a totally different world too. For me, growing up in Australia, you know, like 80 houses and one shop and the bush and the beach, you know, as opposed to being a parent in Las Vegas, Nevada, with all this. So my lady took a job recently in LA. So she's been traveling a lot, which is usually me the one traveling, but now she's traveling. So I'm kind of trying to figure out the parenthood solo style now in amongst this craziness with the social media and what the kids are watching these days and what they're not watching.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And you relate back to being when we were a kid, like there's nothing similar. Like there's no parallels.
The sentence that begins "when I was your age" has no relevance anymore.
No, not at all.
It is not. You can't say, "Well, when I was," and they argue back perfectly. They say, "Well, it's different now, Dad." You're right, and it is. It's totally different.
Oh, we need G.I. Joe and Transformers back, man. God,
exactly.
or just the stick. Here's a stick. Go play.
There's a tree. Go climb it. You know?
I took my son up a tree he was just turning 6. He'd never climbed a tree. And I looked at him like he had 3 heads. I'm like, you've never climbed a tree? Like this wasn't even something that was possible in my mind as a kid. Like the first thing I did was climb a tree.
Yeah.
So we climbed a tree. But it was crazy.
But Dad, is a tree in here? Is it?
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. I got a game called Tree Climber. We could play that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, gosh. As long as it's not on TikTok.
Right? You can climb a tree on Minecraft. You can build a tree.
Exactly. You can totally build a tree.
In Fortnite. Oh.
Well, I mean, I grew up camping, and you did too in Australia, obviously. we lived out in the woods, and I was a Boy Scout. I was an Eagle Scout. I was like, that's the way I grew up, and it was really cool. Are you an Eagle Scout?
I was a Boy Scout. Yeah.
You're a Boy Scout. Yeah. And then in college, I ended up teaching wilderness survival. So the mountains and everything, that's just my thing. And neither one of my kids, my oldest one got into it for a little bit, but my youngest has zero interest in it at all. And you can't force it. You can't do it. It's just they're growing up in a totally different world where that's just not important to be outside.
And isn't it
crazy to
have terms with that, Stormy? It's something that you as a dad and a father love and want to pass on to your son. I mean, this is your son. Sure. And you're like, nah, I'm not really into that. It's like, it's hard to navigate and deal with that on our end and not bring them.
I don't know what the right answer is. I've seen parents do it both ways. I've seen how we do it. And, you know, I've seen it, screw it, you will be into it to the point where they end up hating it. And then what you hope is you just introduce it enough. At least this is my approach. It could be wrong too. You introduce it enough and talk about it enough and at least lay it out there enough that at some point the interest is going to be theirs. And they're just going to go, I wonder what that was. Dad used to talk about that all the time. Maybe I should go try that. And because it's fly fishing is that way for me. Fly fishing was that way for me. My dad tried to teach me fly fishing my entire childhood. And there's nothing I wanted to do less than go fly fishing. That would just seem like a miserable, boring sport to do. And the first thing I did when I turned like 18, I went out and bought a fly rod and just on my own went fly fishing for just because it'd been embedded all growing up, and suddenly I was like, maybe this, there's some to that. So I hope that's the case. I hope just by the power of suggestion is making enough of an imprint.
Yeah.
I grew up in a family. My parents had me at 16 years old, and they're still together. And I'm the oldest of four. I have a brother and two sisters. So family is like, it's just embedded in us. That's how you and I get along so well. His parents call me from Australia, we're just, it's a family driven thing. And I remember I raised money one night, surprised him, because he hadn't seen his parents in 3.5 years because he was touring with Lifehouse. His mom couldn't fly. And I raised some money and got him tickets, which that was a lot of money to go to Australia. And sent him home, but waited for his mom to be okay, and then flew his parents to the States.
Oh, that's great.
That's cool, man.
Because we're very family. And, sure. And it's an awesome thing. And I know what my parents, I know the things that I witnessed that I was like, oh, I'm not going to be like that. And the things that I witnessed and I go, I want that, where my friends come up to me and say, that what I love about your house is the door was always open for any of us. There was no questions asked. Your parents would always look out for us and they always hugged us. Mm-hmm. Your family was always huggers. And so, as adults, to have adults go, my wife's family doesn't hug very much, but I make sure that I hug my daughter every day because your parents hug me every day. I grew up not getting hugs, and I bring tears to my eyes because that little thing, that unknown thing of love just being given to me was what I tried to, give to my kids. And it was important to me in all those little moments, to drive in the middle of the night because I miss them. I'm going to take a few days off. I'm just going and going to go be with them.
April 21st, Las Vegas, next month. I'm giving you a hug, Brian. Hope you're cool with that.
Well, dude, you know what's funny? April 21st, I'm going to be in Oregon. I'm driving to see my kid.
Come on!
We're going to see you in the morning, though. Right?
I'll be driving. You'll be flying. Yeah.
Okay. Ben, I'll take the hugs, too. Take the hugs right now. Gentlemen, we're like close to 2 hours here. So I'm
half.
It's a beautiful thing, man. This has been like my favorite episode in the history of episode date so far.
It's been a blast.
I want to thank each and every one of you, Ben, Brian of Elvis Monroe, of course, Stormy Warren, SiriusXM's The Highway Morning Show, the biggest, baddest country station in the history of all things radio, for taking his time to join us on Dadcast. Of course, on behalf of my man, Nick Martin, and my co-host, who, without you, my bud, none of this is possible.
Wouldn't be possible without you either.
yeah, I know.
You guys are great. I love the theme of this. I love what you guys do. It's great. Keep it up.
I got to say, my wife was like super stoked when you hit us back on Twitter. She's like, oh my God, it's Stormy Warren. Like, we listen to you every morning going to work and stuff. And she's like, so far, that's my favorite guest. I'm like, wow. Cool. So it was awesome for sure.
JP, Nick, and Stormy from Brian and I. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Stormy, I know you're a busy guy. And
I'm serious. You guys keep writing and recording. Please just keep me in the loop.
And absolutely, man. Thank you for your time, brother.
It's awesome. And Brian, for everything you're doing for Nick and I, man, again, we couldn't
be doing without
you. Thank you so much. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact Brett Young was on this show earlier.
Thanks for seven number one songs, Brett
Young. Forget that guy.
For making an appearance on Dadcast. He kind of disappeared there in the middle of that song.
He texts us. He had to go.
His wife said, time to go, baby. And he had to go do dad stuff.
That's all that is, right? So Brett, on behalf of all of us, thank you for being on the show. That was extra, extra special. I always do this on every show. Gentlemen.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Dadcast.
Very cute.
Those are my kids. Love that. That's a drop. That is it for this episode of Dadcast. Once again, Ben Carey, Brian Hopkins, Elvis Monroe, Stormy Warren of The Highway, SiriusXM, Nick. Thank you guys for being on this episode, and we look forward to seeing you all soon and maybe doing another episode in the very near future.
Love to.
Yeah.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Stormy.
Hey, you cheers, guys too. Thank you so much. Great job, guys.
You guys are awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Right.
This episode has been brought to you by our amazing sponsors, Anchor Valley Wine, Boneyard Elixir, Red Robin, America's Gourmet Burgers and Spirits, Happy Dragon, Mongolian Barbecue, Chris Barnett of Barnett Group at Realty Executives, and JL Insurance.